Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. The AARP, once upon a time known as the American Association of Retired Persons, has joined a chorus of major organizations. In fact, they've been out front criticizing the health care plan that Republicans hope to replace Obamacare with. According to AARP, the GOP's American Health Care Act will make health care more expensive and unattainable for its members, many of whom are retired or near retirement, by increasing premiums for older Americans and weakening Medicare, among other things. Joining me now to discuss this is AARP's New York State Director, Beth Finkel. Thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Love to be here.
So one of the bedrock changes in this Paul Ryan bill, directly relevant to groups members, older Americans, it replaces Obamacare's subsidies for insurance premiums by income with subsidies in the form of tax credits by age. A younger person would get a $2,000 tax credit. As you get older, you go up to a $4,000 tax credit. Here's Health and Human Services Secretary, Trump appointee Tom Price, defending that idea on Meet the Press yesterday.
The most predictive element of an individual's life in terms of what health coverage will cost is not income, and it makes sense, it's age. When your age increases, your health care costs increase and the cost of the coverage increases. So they've pegged it to age. There's an opportunity to put some means testing in there, but that's not the most the correlation factor to what it actually costs. Age is the thing that correlates best to what health coverage costs.
So, Beth Finkel, how good a replacement of Obamacare subsidies is that, in your opinion, for, let's say, you're roughly age 50 to 64 members?
Oh, it's no compensation at all. I mean, let's not misunderstand. This would be a dreadful turn of events for 50 to 64-year-olds. They're talking about an age tax. They don't call it an age tax, but that's what it is. It's an age tax. And so right now, the ratio that a 50 to 64-year-old would have to pay is 3 to 1. So they would pay three times, possibly, what somebody younger might have to pay.
This is on the Obamacare exchange private policies for the same policy.
That's right.
There's, under that law, a cap that an older person can only be charged three times what a younger person is charged for the same insurance policy, correct?
Correct. And we had to fight really hard, and we really wanted it to be one-to-one because there's bias in here. And as people are getting older, a lot of them are working longer than they expected, and they really cannot afford this. So let me give you some idea of what this really means. So they're talking about now changing that ratio in this healthcare change to a 5-to-1 ratio. So we're talking about the impact of that. If you, it would be up to $3,200 for a 64-year-old, while reducing premiums for somebody younger by only $700. So that's really not enough of an incentive significantly to get younger people signed on. But more than that, if you escalate those numbers, and these are the ones that are really shocking because we've done some studies on this. So we estimate that the bill's changes to the current law's tax credits would actually increase the premium cost for a 55-year-old who is earning $25,000 a year. So we're not talking about people living high on the hog here. 55-year-old earning $25,000 a year, their premium would be increased by $2,300. And then when you go up from that to a 64-year-old who's earning $25,000 a year, that would increase, they would, their increase would be up to $4,400 a year. So out of a $25,000 income, they would be paying $4,400 a year. That impact is crazy. And I can keep giving you more numbers to show you how crazy that ratio is.
And people can get lost in the numerical weeds here. But what you're saying is this $4,000 tax credit that the oldest people would get buying private insurance would be less than the increase in premiums that you think would occur as a result of allowing the Obamacare 3-to-1 pricing limits by age to go up to 5-to-1.
Exactly. And just to give you the last data point in that, because I know it's a lot of numbers, but this has got to make you scratch your head, because it would end up that for a 64-year-old who earns $15,000 a year, the way the tables go, they would have to pay it $8,400 a year. So $15,000 a year in income, $8,400. I mean, you can't. It's crazy.
Listeners, call us up if you have a question about the impact of Obamacare repeal and replace as proposed in the House of Representatives now. For our guest, Beth Finkel, New York State Director for AARP. This is particularly for people 50 and over, but anybody can call 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.
You know, we say 50 and older. I mean, folks, everybody's hoping to live to be 50 and older. This is a law that's going to go into effect that if it goes into effect, we all will be living with this. Millennials, hello, you're going to be living with this. It's not just about your parents and grandparents. It's about you and your future, because this would weaken Medicare. It would leave the door open to a voucher program that would shift so much more costs and risk to seniors. And one day, all goes well, you will hope to be seniors.
Indeed. Now, with Medicare, AARP members over 65, all Americans over 65 are on Medicare. This is not technically changed. Medicaid has changed. We've been talking about that. Private individual insurance policies would be changed because the Obamacare exchanges would be abolished. But Medicare per se is not changed. So why are you concerned about Medicare?
Well, because we're very concerned about the solvency of Medicare. And one of the pieces in this bill that is particularly egregious is they want to take away a tax on higher income people. It's actually 0.9%. If they take away that one tax, it is going to take away 4 years of solvency in Medicare trust fund.
In other words, this was part of Obamacare, right? Was to keep funding the healthcare system. And we all know Medicare is under financial pressure from more and more medical procedures and treatments and tests always coming in all the time that could potentially be covered, and the aging of the population. So Medicare has been under financial pressure. And to help keep it solvent, part of Obamacare was a surcharge on the highest income earners for Medicare. Trump would take that away.
Yes. And so right,
tax cuts
so
for the
right
rich.
Now, the solvency, that's right. And this is such a special interest act. That's what really can make you craziest of all. Medicare Trust Fund, the trustees had it solvent through 2028. You take away 4 years from that, 2024. And a lot of these other pieces are also egregious to protecting people. You're going to hear a lot of conversation about premium support, and people don't understand what premium support means. It means vouchers. They're suggesting vouchers for people on Medicare. There's no control that Medicare will be the way folks know it today, that if you are sick, it is there for you. If you get vouchers, you get a certain amount, and then after that, you're on your own, kid. I mean, that's it. Kiss off. Goodbye.
House Speaker Paul Ryan is leading this in Congress. It's Trump-Ryan care, really, Trump-Ryan care that's emerging here. I want to get your reaction to some things that Paul Ryan said on CBS Face the Nation yesterday. Ryan is an Ayn Rand libertarian by background and speaks in the Randian language of freedom. Even skeptics of his would say, even if it means freedom to be bankrupted through your health bills because of market forces. So he's very much for the freedom of healthy people not to buy health insurance, as was required by Obamacare. despite the national consequences of that. Here's Ryan with his basic take on the state of Obamacare today.
Let me put it this way. Obamacare is collapsing. If we just did nothing, washed our hands of the situation, we would see a further collapse of the health insurance markets. So we feel an obligation to step in front of that collapse and replace this law with one that works, that has more freedom.
More freedom. One that works, that has more freedom. He comes back to that idea time and time again. Here's another example, that word, later in the interview.
Obamacare, which is crashing and blowing up our fiscal problem and repealing it and replacing it with good tax policy that equalizes the tax treatment of health care and gives people more choice and more freedom.
More freedom. And again, at another point.
And the beautiful thing about this plan that we're proposing, it's more freedom, it's more choices, it's more markets, it's lower prices, which gets us better access.
So what's the definition of freedom? Here it is.
The point is, a lot of people who you just mentioned, I think they'd like to see us continue to make Americans buy what we say they should buy. We don't agree.
We don't agree that Americans should be made to buy health insurance. Did AARP like the individual mandate?
I think we all have to understand the premise of what insurance means. You buy insurance because one day your house, God forbid, may burn down. You're not expecting that your house is going to have to burn down. And if everyone doesn't equally buy into the pool, then the actuaries would go crazy because you wouldn't have enough well people. There's just the math won't work on it. But let's talk about real freedom here. He keeps talking about freedom for individuals. Let's talk about freedom for the American society. And let's talk about what a sweetheart deal this is. Talk about freedom. This is freedom for drug companies. In this bill, there's a give back to them, a gift to them of $25 billion to drug companies.
In what form?
And they will not have to pay fees on importing drugs from out of the country. Why are we giving drug companies a $25 billion gift? You know, folks, that's the question that we have to ask, because all of these things undercut the balance of the money that actually ends up providing health care to us.
And also, Donald Trump had said on the campaign trail that he wants to give Medicare the power to negotiate price with the drug companies, which they don't have now because Republicans in the past have said, no, Medicare is so big it would put too much negotiating pressure on the drug companies and they wouldn't be able to make enough money for their medications. But Trump took the other side on that. He took what is traditionally the Democrats' position. No, the power should be with the people. The consumers who are in Medicare should be able to negotiate, like any other group, for price breaks from pharmaceutical companies. But when Dr. Price from HHS, Trump's appointee, was on Meet the Press yesterday, he seemed to start to walk away from that promise. Are you aware of whether the Trump administration seems committed to having Medicare be able to negotiate price with pharmaceutical companies?
President Trump was very clear when he was on the campaign trail that he was not going to hurt Medicare beneficiaries or Social Security beneficiaries. And we are taking him at his word. AARP believes what he said on the campaign trail, that he is going to protect Medicare and Social Security. And so that's...
And I want to come back to the Paul Ryan definition of freedom, because Democrats want to establish that having health insurance is a right. Paul Ryan wants to establish that not having health insurance is a right. His definition of freedom, no matter the impact on your constituency, older adults who then get soaked because they're higher risk.
We're all going to get soaked. You don't have health insurance, you end up not going into the medical system till it gets catastrophic. And then it's so much more expensive to pay for. And so then we all pay, right?
My own theory is that if they wanted to fix Obamacare, and obviously that's not the politics of this, but if they wanted to fix what wasn't working about Obamacare, and there certainly were things, it would be that they should get tougher on the people who weren't buying health insurance, the younger, healthier people who were saying, oh, the tax penalty isn't so big, so I will forego health insurance, still in large numbers. Establishing that health insurance is a responsibility rather than not buying health insurance is a right could fix Obamacare. It's like buying car insurance. The law in every state requires car owners to buy car insurance because if it's voluntary, rates would be exorbitant to cover the cost of real damages when people are in serious accidents. So car insurance is a responsibility. It works for the common good, and no one complains. But to not buy health insurance, Paul Ryan says, freedom.
Well, I actually want to go back to what you mentioned about prescription drugs, right? Because why do we not empower CMS to negotiate for prescription drugs? That is something that could be improved. We've heard the Republicans talk about it. We've heard the president talk about it. Let's go back and do that. You know, if the Veterans Administration can negotiate for drugs, I don't understand why CMS can't.
We'll continue in a minute with Beth Finkel, New York State Director of AARP. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll talk about pre-existing conditions, which has kind of gone back and forth in some of these proposals, and we'll see where it landed in this one. And we continue to talk about the Trump-Ryan health care bill from AARP's perspective and yours, 212-433-WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Beth Finkel, New York State Director for AARP, as we talk about impact of the Trump-Ryan healthcare proposal. And Anthony in Greenberg, New York, you're on WNYC. Hello, Anthony.
Hey, Brian. You know, this is just three quick points. Mr. Ryan, Mr. Price, and Mr. Trump should realize that people my age, I'm 62, and 50, 64, we vote, and we vote a lot. And then you just said something about the kids. You know, my son just graduated from college, and his student loan cost alone will preclude him from being able to afford to pay for health care. You know, and finally this. I hope this will wake up all those people who voted Republican. They're watching how they're going to give a tax break to the wealthy, you know, and actually saying that Mr. Obama's health care program is a disaster. It's death. And all this talk about freedom, you know, I don't see any freedom in anything these guys are saying. And I hope they should realize that all they're going to do is wake up a sweeping America that slept through this last president election.
Let me just follow up on one piece of that. The one piece that may be, you know, which one doesn't belong, that your son, who's got all those student loans, didn't want the individual mandate to have to buy health insurance. Is that right?
But he needs health insurance. I mean, it's just like the lady said. We have car insurance in case our car breaks down. My son needs health insurance
right.
in case
right.
something happens to him.
God.
I mean, our kids should count more than anything.
Anthony, thank
you. And forget it.
Thank you very much for starting us off. Call us again. Myrna in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Myrna.
Yes, hi. I just want to ask, why is it that the American people cannot receive the same health insurance that the members of Congress receive? And I think that would be a very easy solution.
Thank you, Myrna. Do you know what the congressional health insurance choice menu is? Don't know. Neither of us know. I know this came up before. This came up in the Obamacare debate 6 or 8 years ago when this was all being debated and passed, and what form is it going to take, and is there going to be a public option, and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's a talking point that people have, because why should Congress be privileged with really good health insurance while they have the power to foist other kinds of health insurance on us? So the principle is whatever Congress has should be affordable and made affordable to the rest of America. Mary in Stamford, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I wanted to tell people that as a registered Republican, I couldn't have been more pleased to be able to have Obamacare because it enabled me to walk. I was in a full leg brace and couldn't afford, and no one would insure me. So it was really important when Obamacare came along. I think another piece of this equation we can't forget, and I don't hear anybody talking about it on the news programs, is that by going from a subsidy to a tax credit, we end up making the taxpayer fund it on a monthly basis, whereas now the subsidies help the cash flow for those that don't earn a lot of money. And the last piece is I would like to propose the idea that freedom is also the idea that in the context of going down a walk, going on a walk down a street or being in a mall, that I should have the freedom to know that the people near me are able to have health care so that I'm not going to get sick because they either aren't insured or won't be insured. There's a whole element of that piece that it's not that I have a right to be healthy. I have a right to be healthy in the context of society, and that's a piece that needs to be brought up and raised and made important.
Mary,
thank you.
Thank you very much. William on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, William.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
First, I had a comment based on the messaging and also on the New York Times piece that described the cliff where middle-class sole proprietors would be benefited, which is only about 3%, which is what I am. I'm an architect, sole proprietor.
Mm-hmm.
What was the Democrats' expected tweak to the ACA if that was going to happen? And why are why aren't they messaging to those voters that are affected in that way rather than just the low end? And by the way, as a sole proprietor, it's only they establish that as the people who benefit only make less than $100,000, which isn't really wealthy people, which seems to be how it's being portrayed.
William, as a sole proprietor, independent business person, do you buy your health care now on the Obamacare exchanges?
That's correct, yes.
And
it's gone up a lot in 2 years, almost tripled.
Yeah. And what was it before Obamacare? Were you doing this then? Because the defenders of Obamacare say you're looking at the wrong thing if you just look at the increases under Obamacare, because the increases in insurance premiums were going up more steeply before Obamacare. Was that true for you, if you have enough experience with it?
No, I have had my insurance through the Freelancers Union.
Yes.
For five to six years.
Right. So that was a different kind of group.
Right. And it was very competitive and affordable, less than $400 a month and reasonable deductibles and great support. But that was in effect, the Freelancers Union did so well because they offered health insurance, but they in effect got killed, so to speak, by the ACA.
Right. So what fix would you recommend in a perfect world to Obamacare as it exists to save it but fix it?
Well, first thing is I would not propose sweetheart deals for drug companies and big insurance companies, because that's what this is about. And so I think we all have to be very, very concerned about how the prioritizing of freedom for anybody is viewed.
What do you think, to William's point, are the real politics of this? I mean, Ryan may have his ideology, but that only goes so far. Politics is politics. So whose interest do you think he's catering to? I mean, not the 20 million extra people who got access to affordable health insurance through Obamacare. So who? I mean, I know you're going to say pharmaceutical companies, but is there a population group also that wants this?
Well, I really can't answer that. I can just say that if we're looking at making life better for the average American, we have to look at who's going to be getting the bounty off of this plan. And it is not the everyday American. In fact, it is off the backs of everyday Americans with sweetheart deals to drug companies and to insurance companies. And there's no reason for it.
Pre-existing conditions. Would this bill treat them the same way as Obamacare, which is they cannot be considered by the insurance company for setting your rate?
You know, we've been hearing both. The last I heard is that actually the conditions will be covered, but we don't know in the end. We all know the CBO is coming out with the scoring today, and that's another big issue. And by the way, we haven't talked about the hit to Medicaid across the country, and also particularly the threat here in New York State.
Yes,
so those
and,
are two
and,
things we probably should
And I
should
was going
add.
To get to Medicaid. Just to finish the thought on pre-existing conditions, mm-hmm. I also have been hearing two versions. One is that it will be the same as now, where pre-existing conditions, you don't have to worry about it in terms of insurance premium rates. But I also keep hearing people talk about high-risk pools, which is a different model. Specific insurance pools for people with pre-existing conditions. Is that something AARP has a position on?
Oh, we are firmly against anything that would not protect people who already have pre-existing conditions. That was a very major factor in our support of the ACA, and it will always be going forward.
Well, what is a high-risk pool, as you understand it? Is it not that the government then subsidizes insurance for people who are considered high risk and are – because they have pre-existing conditions, it doesn't cover the difference enough?
I think we need to go back again and look at why we have to have a pool of people in the system who are healthy, because that's the only way insurance works. If you want to talk about capitalism and business, that's the only way it works. There's no tricks around the actuary tables trying to figure that out.
If every
healthy
adult,
people have to buy into it so that it will be there when, God forbid, one day they may not be healthy.
If the pool is universal, you don't need a separate high-risk pool. One more Paul Ryan clip, and this is on the fate of Medicaid. Now, Medicaid, and for people who don't know, Medicare is government insurance for people who are 65 plus. Medicaid is for anybody who's low income enough at any age, and it was always a federal guarantee since it came in 50 years ago. If you're low income, the federal government will give you health insurance. But Ryan in this clip talks about giving it back to the states as if the states once owned it and the federal government stole it from them.
We're taking one entitlement that's going bankrupt, Medicaid, where more and more low-income people don't even get access to a doctor, and we're giving it back to the states so that they can experiment and innovate and make it work better for low-income citizens.
Paul Ryan on Face the Nation yesterday. What about anything in that clip? Giving it back to the states, quote-unquote, and Ryan's prediction that the flexibility for the states will result in more innovation, which will wind up covering more low-income people because the state will be more innovative and efficient.
Well, all you have to do is look at the papers today, which talk about the jeopardy in New York State alone of $3.7 billion, because if they freeze Medicaid in the year 2020, that's what we're looking at. That, and I think your earlier visitors talked about the impact of this on city budget. You know, we're out there advocating for more money in senior services in New York City every single day, but this just changes the whole field. And especially at the state level, it can be devastating. I think you saw DiNapoli talk about what the ramifications might be.
The New York State Comptroller.
Yeah, so this is very scary. And there's another part to this, and that is the 17.4 million people who get long-term care services through Medicaid. That's across the country. And of that, 6.9 million of them are 65 plus. This helps people live independently in their own homes. It's the long-term care portion of Medicaid. And if you eliminate that, you're telling these 17.4 million children and adults with disabilities and seniors that by eliminating these much-needed services, these people can't stay in their own homes anymore. What are we going to do, institutionalize them all? Is that the mark of our civilization?
But wait, I haven't heard this piece before. Is mm-hmm. something in this Trump-Ryan bill specifically designed to take away home health aides, in-home, you know, long-term health care as something that Medicaid provides?
Yes. We really oppose the provisions of this American Health Care Act because it would create a per capita cap financing structure in the Medicaid program, right? And through that, we're concerned that it would endanger these people who were getting the long-term care portion of this, which is the piece that is the assistance with activities of daily living, eating, bathing, dressing, managing medications, transportation, etc.
Ryan says when the government gets a little bit out of the business, there's going to be more competition. If not, everything has to be in every health insurance policy. There's, you know, it's going to be it's going to let premiums go down, especially for younger, healthier people. Then more people will want to buy it. So more health insurers will participate. Right now in a lot of places, there's just one health insurance company, even on the exchanges, because they're not finding it profitable. And then the market pressures will push the prices down, and it'll take care of all these other problems.
Well, we were living in paradise before ACA. Is that what they're saying? I mean, you know.
Because that's what we had before.
Because
Obamacare.
Those 20 million people that were not covered, all of a sudden, by magic, they're going to get covered again. This bill is not designed to cover those 20 million people.
Frank in Bloomfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you, Brian? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, this all really sounds really confusing. I can tell by the questions that you're asking, you know, which is all brand new to everybody, this proposal. First, I just wanted to make a statement that, you know, I think it's really now it's time for to replace and repeal Ryan and, you know, Trump, you know, hopefully, you know, within the next four after this term. But secondly, since it's getting so confusing, is there a way to, like, kind of bullet point, you know, for the layman person, you know, a clear way to understand the pros and cons about this? Obviously, there's more cons. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, I you know, sometimes CNN or ABC has done, you know, like a town hall kind of situation where they've, you know, tried to make it very understandable to, you know, to the layman,
yes,
citizen, or to everyone who's in, you know, who's this is important to really get a good understanding as to what's going on, and you know, and if this actually becomes a law, how it's going to affect people.
Right, fair enough. And in this format, which is a discussion show, we try to talk through specific pieces of it and help make them make sense to people. But you're right. There are so many moving parts that it's good to see them laid out. Does the AARP have a website that does this?
Thank you so much, Brian. Yes, that's what I was just going to say. Please go to the AARP.org website, because we lay it out, and we lay it out in real time every single day, so people can understand why AARP is opposing this bill and really why we need Americans to stand with us to help their families, their friends, their neighbors, and themselves, because it's going to change radically the way that people can access medical care. And if people wake up when it's all over, it's going to be really sad. So you ought to be calling your representatives right now.
And Frank and everybody, read broadly on this. There are different takes. We had a supporter of Trump Ryan Care on the air last week. We had an opponent from a different perspective. Yep, it's complicated. And yep, it's so important both to our national economy and to our public health that it's really good for everybody to get as educated on this as you can. So look at different sources, including AARP, for which Beth Finkel is the New York State Director. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.